Well, hello, everyone. Happy 2018, first podcast of the year. We're opening it up with a little prayer circle, kicking the year off, you know, faithfully. So our question is, who do we want to send prayers up for in the year 2018? Like people that were just like, so-and-so, we want 2018 to be your year. Ash, anyone?
Selena Gomez.
I knew you were going to say that.
And her mom. By the way, amen. I just think this pod, for some reason, we just talk about Selena and Taylor so disproportionately to like anything else. I don't know why.
But. It's because it's led by us too.
Okay. So recent events are that Selena and her mom are clearly have been having a lot of falling outs. Some have been made obvious by just public actions that they're doing over Instagram and social media. So, you know, there's her, Mandy Tiefy's disapproval of her relationship with Justin. There's just a lot of, and you know, this week, Mandy just kind of calling her out in public over the Woody Allen situation. Just like not a good look for either of them. So I am really praying for their relationship, partly because it's partly selfish because I really want Selena and Justin to do really well also. And I just think that that relationship is just not going to see success if she's having so much trouble with her mom.
Or will it flourish despite the adversity or because of the adversity? Like they still got that like teenage rebellion streak and it just fuels their love.
There's just so much less chance of success that way.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Not going to hope for that. So yeah, my prayer hand emojis are for Selena and Mandy Tiefy.
Okay. That's a good one. Mine are sparked by recent episodes of Keeping Up with the Kardashians that I've been watching. And it's for Scott Disick. Like,
okay, yeah.
You know, time and time again, he just kind of screws things up. And it's a sad, vicious cycle. Addiction is not a joke. And I just really want to see him get it together. Like once and for all, for real, like get your act together. You have three children. And like not even for him and Courtney. I think we can all agree that Courtney is really living her best life right now, free from the shackles that is Scott. Okay. And you know, good for her. But like just for Scott. I just want it for Scott. Like he has just seemed very sad in the last couple of episodes that he's been in where he's just sort of like minorly in the background and he just seems down and it makes me sad for him.
Are you praying for Sophia also or just Scott?
Just Scott. I think Sophia is going to, you know, like they're not going to last and she's going to go on and date someone else. And throughout this whole thing, it's really just made me question Lionel Richie's parenting, really, or lack thereof, probably.
Well, Nicole's done really well.
Yeah, but she had her whole simple life phase and that wasn't a good look. True. Like, why must you stumble so publicly before you, you know, finally get on the straight and narrow? So prayers up, you know? And so I hope the best for both those parties, all those parties.
Okay, so we didn't put too much thought into our topics today, but we can kind of just go with it.
Sure, yeah. I added a couple things there.
Well, I think what I'm interested in talking about is Margot Robbie.
Okay.
I've just been very impressed with her. By the way, my friend did watch I, Tonya. Have you?
Mm-mm.
My coworker watched I, Tonya and said that she was just okay in it and said that she was too pretty for it, which, you know, I think was clearly what she was going for. She was just going for a grittier role. Anyways, there was a profile that came out of her. Was that GQ or what was it?
Might have been GQ. I think it might have been Vanity Fair, something like that.
Okay. And so there was a profile about her and then just talking a lot. It was a very positive profile. So props to her.
But usually these are. You're not going to do one unless you're Miles Teller and you're dumb.
Yeah.
But usually they're like, they're done because they're supposed to promote the movie and be positive.
I guess so. Yeah, that's true. So, but that does imply that you have to have like good relations with the journalist, you know, like, and yeah, that your PR team did a good job. And so anyways, it talked about just like the evolution of her career. And I was actually just really fascinated. I remember when she first appeared in Wolf of Wall Street, I did think like, oh, she's just another like pretty blonde girl. Like I'm probably going to forget about her. She doesn't seem that different, though she is really hot.
I never saw her in that role. Did you actually feel like there was something stand out about her performance in that?
I didn't. That's what's so interesting. Like that. So they talked about how like she was like, she almost like stole the show or she was such a standout in that movie. I didn't necessarily think that, but you know, thinking back, like, I guess I could see how that's happened. Like she is a memorable, like when I think of scenes from that movie, like I do think of her scenes or maybe because those were just like promoted especially. So yeah, I could see if like critics just critics thought that she was just a standout in that movie. Like, that's really good for her. But even since then, what she's done is just make very strategic moves to not get typecast and also to just create roles for herself. So I was confused about how she got the I, Tonya role.
She went out and did it herself.
Yeah, so she has her own production company with her husband and got this film made herself and just put herself in it because I guess she, you know, maybe she knew that the roles that would be offered to her would be those really like typical hot blonde girl girl roles. And I was just very impressed.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting? I agree. I read that same thing. Two notes. One is that like it also talks about how she kind of has this like hustler background, right? Like even as a kid, and I feel like a lot of successful people have this type of story, right? It's like I would like pick up seashells and sell them to like make a little extra cash, and I think it goes down to like that trait that we used to talk about in interviewing, which is grit, you know, like the ability to have grit and persevere. And I told like, yeah, I think that's like super indicative of the fact that, you know, people who have that are successful because she had that. And you hear that about all the great entrepreneurs, you know, like Elon Musk, Bill Gates, whatever. So I think that's pretty cool. So
good for her. And then also recently, did you watch the interview on Ellen yet?
No.
Oh my God. So then she was also on Ellen recently and she just told the best story. Like, well, her and Ellen really hyped it before it happened. But basically what happened was that she went on her honeymoon with her husband and they went to go work out this gym. They were like in like Tahiti or some really like exotic island and in one of those resorts that's like everyone has their own villa. And it's just like really, it was somewhere off Tahiti. So it was like pretty random. And like, they didn't think a lot of people would be there. And so they go to the gym to work out and her husband only has these really, really short shorts, like so short, like just like way above the thigh. And cause he was just like, I'm not going to see anyone. Like, what's going to happen? Then they walk into the gym. First person they see is Ellen.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes. Ellen
DeGeneres. Oh my God.
And that was basically, that was actually the first time that they met. And so they were like, hi, like, nice to meet you. And she was just like already like so floored that Ellen like would know who she was. And then right next to her, of course, was Portia.
Uh-huh.
So she was like dying. And then like, and then, you know, the husband is like dying of embarrassment because these shorts are seriously so short.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to watch this.
Okay. It doesn't end there because then Ellen goes, hey, so have you met Obama? And she points like next to her.
No.
Obama is like there working out in this same like tiny gym in like a really tiny room.
What A-list freaking facility is this?
I know.
You should go there for your honeymoon.
And then it sounded like they signed up for some like some stretching class, like someone was leading them in something. And I it's not clear whether Ellen and Obama were part of the class, but they were certainly there to witness it. And so Margot and her husband were doing like stretches.
Oh no.
Yeah, and it was just like, you could see everything. And Ellen was just laughing because she was like, yeah, you like, I saw way too much.
Well, that was something cool in the profile too, was it talked about how Margot actually surrounds herself with a lot of like quote below the line people. So like a lot of, most of her friends, the people in the production company, her husband, they're all like just like crew members, you know, and not even like glamorous ones. They're like camera assistants and whatnot and yeah, grips and stuff, which is cool.
I think that's really good. What is her husband? Do you remember?
He was like a camera dude or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And another thing that I think is interesting, which this conversation reminds me of, is a article I read in Vulture, of course, which is about like sort of, there's this whole talk about like the death of the rom-com.
Yeah.
And I feel like Margot is part of this like new wave of like starlet slash like celebrity female who has really bypassed the rom-com as a vehicle to like stardom, largely because the rom-com doesn't exist in a good form anymore. But if you think about like her and like really well-respected people like Alicia Vikander, Brie Larson, like these past Oscar winners, Saoirse, you know, none of them have really starred in a traditional romantic comedy. Or even like just what anything you would consider like a traditional female role in that type of movie.
That's a good point. That's really exciting. I hadn't thought about that. What do you think about Blake Lively? Did she surpass that or did she do?
I don't think she's in the same class as them.
Like led her to fame.
Yeah, I think like, so in the article I was reading, it was like talking about like, yes, there are women who like are sort of the rom-com go-tos, but they're like, to be frank, they don't have a lot of critical respect, right? They're very much like commercial people, like a Kate Hudson, a Jennifer Lopez, Blake Lively, to me, falls into that category where it's like, yeah, you're a well-known household name, but like, are you really in contention for like Oscars? No, right? You're not going to get called up by like Scorsese. Whereas like this group of actresses are like incredibly successful getting like all these like fashion house campaigns, and they managed to do so without like being that little rom-com girl, you know? So I thought that was interesting.
Jessica Chastain too.
Jessica Chastain's in that category for sure, yeah.
But I'm asking because Blake is trying real hard to do those drama roles though.
But I don't think she's doing a good job at it.
I know. Like there've just been pictures of her like on sets and stuff, and it's like, you know, those classic like Blake like looks like you can't even tell it's Blake because she's so much like kind of trying to do her like her monster or whatever.
I think she really needs to find that. But then a part of me wonders if she has the talent to get to that level.
Remember when it was in is it The Town?
Yeah, which like everyone made such a big deal about, and I was like, I don't know, she didn't blow me away in that performance.
Yeah, I didn't think she was that great, but I mean,
and she was still really hot, so like it's just and she also it's out of fairness to her, I think she does have a bit more of an uphill climb because it's hard when you start on Gossip Girl on the CW, right? Like, which was such a part of like the zeitgeist too, you know, like that's a lot of sort of baggage if you're going to try and become that Oscar winning leading lady. But who cares, girl, you're married to Ryan Reynolds.
I know. She's got it good. I think she's got it really good.
She's got it amazing. I wish I could be Blake Lively. Shoot.
Because she basically at this point does have the freedom to do whatever role she wants. Like, I'm surprised she's getting these like really dramatic roles. But and she's, I don't think she's like doing the Margot route where she's developing her own. I'm not sure.
I don't know if I think she could get any role she wants. Like, I feel like the serious roles are like, I actually would say she's the opposite. Like, she probably would struggle a lot to get like a serious Oscar bait movie because I think most directors don't see her as that, you know, typical.
Yeah, I guess. So where'd you put that category of like, what's that, like that surfing movie that she did?
Like that was like a B grade like movie to me. That's
okay.
That's like a, I don't know, like a those horror movies that, you know, do really well at the box office, but like it's not really gonna win you any awards. You know, she's definitely like Jennifer Lawrence is still top of that list. Emma Stone, you know, I feel like those people are the ones. But yeah, just good for Margot. I still wish the rom-com was a flourishing genre of movie, but
I wish too. I miss them so much.
I'm getting tired of watching the same, like, you know, 15 ones on cable television.
I haven't read Crazy Rich Asians, but is that like kind of, is it a rom-com?
I think it would fall into that category. I am so excited for Crazy Rich Asians.
I have very high hopes for it.
I'm so excited. It has everybody that I love. Everybody. It's going to be amazing.
So Constance Wu, who I'm really excited about, but also speaking just like cool women in general, I also wanted to talk about Ellen Pompeo because we both read her interview today.
Yes.
And oh my God, it was just so fascinating to me. Like, I just like didn't realize this stuff was going on, but it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
So one thing she said in this article, in this interview was that with the departure of Patrick Dempsey, it just helped her so much deal-wise and in getting paid more for her role, and how in the past that they, you know, even if she would ever, I guess they would always like pin her to Patrick, right? Or like,
yeah, they would say like, well, we don't need you. If you walk away from this negotiation, we still have Patrick, because he's granted a bigger name. But yeah, the fact that he left, they didn't have any bargaining chips. You can't have Grey's Anatomy without Meredith Grey.
Right, exactly. And the fact that, like, yeah, like it literally was her name, like Meredith Grey, like she plays the title character, and yet she still felt like when Patrick was there, she still felt like bound and like tied to this role, and how that her and Patrick never talked about the details of each of their deals, which I could understand the privacy around that.
Right.
It's kind of,
I don't want to like pin that on Patrick, because if you think about it, like, do you talk to your coworkers about your salary? Exactly. You know, like, it is kind of weird.
Yeah. Which makes the whole salary wage question that's been coming up so much, particularly with like Michelle Williams, for example, it's just like, yeah, how would that, I'm just curious how that conversation would have happened if, you know, people aren't really typically discussing their deals anyways, but
Yeah. And what I also liked was that she was so frank about sort of like the fact that like, yeah, I've been on the same show for 14 seasons. Like it gets boring, you know, like I think she almost says that verbatim, like I don't find it fulfilling, or like it gets really boring, or even directing, like she doesn't find it that fulfilling, which is usually what every actor like longs to do.
Yeah.
So I thought it was cool. And then she talks about her rough, or maybe the article talks about like her rough childhood. You know, she grew up in like a pretty blue collar neighborhood with like a lot of like mob influences and like a seedy part of Boston. And I thought that was interesting because to me, I read it as like, I feel like that upbringing informed her future life, where it's like, she knows what it's like to have nothing. And she's choosing to like almost sacrifice just to like have that financial stability that she didn't have as a kid, you know? And it almost like made me think of like how, when you think about startup founders and like people who have the ability, or people who are very entrepreneurial, we often come from backgrounds that are very wealthy and affluent because they are used to having that cushion. And so it's easier to take risks because you know that you can fall back. Whereas people who come from a less affluent background are like conditioned to be like, stability is very important to me, like my number one priority. And it just kind of reminded me of that. And I thought it was really cool how she was like, look, if you want me to stay, it's just got to be a ton of money. And it's like, get it, girl, right? Like,
yeah. And I think they did come out, her salary now is what, like $575,000 per episode or something?
Which, by the way, is crazy because think back to Friends, they were making $1 million per half hour.
That's what I was wondering. Like, I don't understand. Like, I was surprised that it was anything less than $1 million, but is it because like the Friends reach is just, that was that much larger than even Grey's is?
I don't know, but like that is, and then that's like not even with inflation, right? Like if that was today, $1 million back in 2005 is so much more. So yeah,
I guess
know.
You have to consider the size of the ensemble of Grey's versus Friends. Like Friends only had 6 people and Grey's is like a ton, but still like.
Yeah, because they do have the caveat that she's the highest paid actress on a drama, because Kaylee Cuoco is making more.
Right. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I feel like sitcoms.
Why is that? It's shorter. I guess they're making maybe.
I know, but I think in terms of just like, even just like ads and reach, like a lot more people watch sitcoms than dramas, I suppose.
I guess, but you're doing more work on a 40 minute than a 20 minute.
I know. What about Sofia Vergara? Is she no longer the top?
I don't know. So Kaylee's making $1 million per ep. Let's look at a Modern Family cast salary. Oh no, yeah, they're not even close. Oh wait, no, those are the kids. The kids are making like 500K. Get it, Wells. Got himself a sugar mama. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't say in this article.
I think you probably do have to take into consideration ensemble size too, because I think Kaylee sounds like maybe she also benefited from the fact that it is like, at most, a group of 6 that their people pick.
But like on the Grey's cast now, like it's changed so much. There are no more big names. Like everyone who we can name is no longer on the show. So like those people are getting paid peanuts. Like I don't even think their salary is a drop in the bucket at this point.
Do you think that her salary has ebbed and flowed with the ratings, or it would have only gone up consistently?
That's a good question. I feel like Grey's has been a pretty consistent performer, so I wouldn't be surprised if it's been somewhat stable, but yeah. Sorry, I'm still looking up the Sofia Vergara. She's the highest paid actress for all the stuff that she does, but I can't tell if it's including like her commercial work, you know. I think this article is saying that she's highest paid because she has all this endorsement money that she makes.
When do they decide to publicize actors and actresses' salaries?
It's a great question. I don't know. Yeah, but anyways, good for Ellen. Love that she's so real about her, you know, like knowing her own worth and negotiating for it.
What do you think she wants to do, or this is what she wants? She wants to make stable money. And
that's kind of what it sounded like. She's like, I chose stability. I chose to make a ton of money, and then I get to do producing on the side. So producing sounds like that's where she gets to feel like creatively fulfilled.
I see.
Which is cool.
Cool. Go Ellen.
Go Ellen. Okay. Do you want to talk about Aziz? Cause it's sort of like the Harvey Weinstein stuff, but I feel like this one hit a little closer to home, and I had a great dialogue with Rachel about this. Cause I think this was much more in the gray area as well. Right. So a lot of people felt a lot more conflicted about it. So what were your thoughts?
Yeah. My thoughts are just that it's not black and white, and it's just so hard to I do like that it's stirring conversation. It's so fascinating that it's Aziz on so many levels. One, because he was just such like a, you know, seemingly such a socially conscious like guy, like someone that like I think everyone's like very like prone to, you know, defending or feeling bad for just because of the persona that he's he's kind of created.
Well, okay, no, continue. But I have thoughts on that.
Is second that he's a man, he's a minority, and then third, the fact that it is just a single instance. Like this is not a Weinstein situation, right? Like. Where it's repeated behavior, but this is one, a single instance. So I think it does make it a very different situation and so fascinating, at least for, I think, our communities. I don't know, maybe in the Asian American community or whatever, but for this to happen. I think also, did you see that there's this article today that like Babe approached the girl, not the girl approached Babe?
No, I didn't see that.
So I need to read more about it, but it sounds like, so the girl that did come out this Babe, article, she's young, she's 23.
Yeah. And I think the other interesting thing also, just to interject, sorry, is that I think a lot of the dialogue has been around how the story has been picked up, and then what people are reading is not the actual source itself, which is something that I talked to Rachel about, because, you know, like the media sensationalizes it so much, but like I read the original Babe article, and so like I read it without the context of like any other commentary, and the Babe article, if you read that, is literally just like basically a transcript of what happened. Right. You know, they don't like editorialize it. They just say like it's the woman's account. And so if you read that, I think it's very different than reading all these other articles that have since come out about like what it means and et cetera, et cetera.
That's true. It's gotten like not twisted, but just kind of,
I feel like, it's interesting that you bring up sort of like the minority piece of it, because I think that's sort of the lens through which like we personally view it. And like when we're talking about with our friends, like, you know, it's sort of tinted with that. But in at least some of the stuff that I've been reading online, because I think this triggered a lot of backlash, that didn't come up as a piece to me. Like what came up was really more just around the nature of the interactions themselves and how it wasn't, you know, it wasn't rape, and she did consent, quote unquote, to like, she did give him, you know, like perform oral sex on him, and he did not like physically force her to do that, right? So like that's what I think triggered a lot of the backlash, because it's like a lot of people just being like, well, what's wrong with this, or like, big deal, this stuff happens. And so I think the argument that Rachel made, which was really fair, she was just like, she felt like the media was making him seem like this sex monster, and she just felt like it was maybe like being blown out of proportion, or like, you know, like almost diminishing to victims of sexual assault, or rape victims or things like that. And so like we were kind of going back and forth, and like we had a really good conversation, and like ultimately where I feel like I landed was that like it's a spectrum. Like I don't think anyone's arguing that this is like Weinstein level, Kevin Spacey level. I don't think like he needs to like never work again, right? Like if he has projects, I don't think they should be pulled. But like if you're looking at it as a spectrum of behavior, like this falls on the spectrum, right? And we need to like hold higher standards. And I think it ultimately points to, you know, like things like just like power dynamics, right? And the imbalance of power in like male and female sexual relationships, like male entitlement to sex, right? And how there is this just general expectation that like guys are entitled to sex. So I think like that's kind of stuff that this interaction brings out. So I still think it's like a worthy contribution to the overall like dialogue around it. I think it's still like a worthwhile contribution to the conversation. And I really like the way Samantha Bee put it. Can I read her quote?
Yeah.
So she, you know, Samantha Bee, awesome late night host. And so she, first of all, she pointed out like, you know, because people are using the word witch hunt a lot, right?
Yeah.
And she said that, so Bee was like, she wanted to point out like what many fail to understand is that it doesn't have to be rape to ruin your life, and it doesn't have to ruin your life to be worth speaking out about. Any kind of sexual harassment or coercion is unacceptable. People like me had to wade through a sea of prehensile dicks to build the world we now enjoy, and part of enjoying that world is setting a higher standard for sex than just not rape. And women get to talk about it if men don't live up to those standards, especially if a man wrote a book about how to sex good. So
I know.
Like, and I think that's a good way to think about it, right? And then she also said, men, if you say you're a feminist, then F like a feminist. If you don't want to do that, take off your effing pin, because we are not your accessories.
Ooh, that's a good line. That's a good quote.
Right? like, I think it just sums it up pretty nicely.
Yeah. It, like last night with me and my friends, it kind of went into this whole conversation of like, it just into guy girl dynamics. Right. And like, I think kind of the whole question of like, what is consent? Right. And, but it gets so nuanced because yeah, like I think guys just have not been raised. And a lot of this is cultural too, right? Like for us as Asian females, like, and, oh, I think what's also interesting is how people are talking about like, everyone's assuming this girl is white. But like, we don't really know. But you know, for example, for us as like Asian females, like it can be very like, I mean, I think we've all been in situations where, you know, guys have made us uncomfortable and have gone farther than we'd like, but we've just kind of gone with it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's out of that like submissive culture or whatever, just wanting to play cool and be chill. Whereas as on the flip side, like for men, it's just how they've been raised to, you know, even that conversation we've had with like our guy friends where it's like, you know, they try a little touching and as long as there's no like rejection, they
view that as an invitation. And yes. And that's why, and I think you were there obviously, like I was really surprised and taken aback to hear that, because to me, like in my head, it's like, oh, if I'm not reciprocating, then clearly I'm not into it. But it's the exact opposite in terms of how they perceive it. They're like, if you're not saying no, it's a yes. And I'm like, if I'm not saying yes, it's a no.
Right.
Those are opposites.
Which is really interesting. And then on top of that, so yeah, but then the thing is like, you know, how would a feminist date, right? And does that look like every single step they're like cordially asking like, is this okay?
Yeah.
Is that because then as women, this is where it gets like so crazy, like complicated as well, is because girls don't necessarily like that either, right? Like girls like a little aggressive.
They want a guy to be confident and
a little dominance. So, I think it's just spurring these kinds of conversations, but which I do think is good. Cause I think there was also, I guess, conversation of like whether she should even come out in public. Should this have been like more of a private conversation?
It sounds like she did state her feelings directly to him though, which I thought was like good for her.
Yeah, I agree. Good for her. And then I think that this is, again, it is a one-time instance. I think everyone's kind of like really sensationalizing it by being like, he just like, this girl's just like taking him down, like his career's over. I think he'll be 100% fine.
Yeah, I think that's a ridiculous way to look at it.
Anything he's going to turn this, he's probably, I imagine, I don't know what you imagine he's doing, but I just imagine, because again, I'm like so like partial to him, I don't know, but that he's like deeply reflecting on the situation. And, you know, I'm sure we're just going to get like, I don't want to like simplify it to this, but like, we're going to get like a really good Master of None episode out of it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think he'll be fine. I almost like don't want him to make it an episode of Masters of None. Cause I feel like that's really risky, which maybe would make it really great. But I feel like I just don't want him to like trivialize it in that sense either.
Exactly. Yeah.
So anyways, it's opened up a lot of good discussion. I had a guy friend text me and be like, what do you think about this whole Aziz thing? Which I liked, you know, I'm like, oh, this is great. It's like conversation, which is a positive thing to come out of this. And then I sent him a bunch of articles about it. And I still think you should read Cat Person, which has been, I think, lumped in with some of the stuff, if you've seen.
I really need to read it.
Yeah. Because it really does talk about just basically like how women feel bad about male dynamics and relationships and that like sense of obligation of, oh, but he's nice and he's done nothing wrong and I'm already here, so I guess I'll just go along with it. And
right, because I'm sure this girl's, because of maybe the books he's written or because of Master of None, like that's probably why she stayed and like kept giving Aziz like a second chance. Like, oh, like this guy seems so like,
it really is. I feel so strongly about this. It's so deeply ingrained in females to be accommodating. Yeah. Like that is just a massive part of everything that culture and society tells us we should be and how we should be. And so that you can't like understate how much that affects like how we grow up and then enter into these relationships or these like interactions.
Okay, should we move into our follow and follow?
Yeah. Oh shoot. Okay. Yes, I have it. Go.
My follow is Chrissy Teigen.
Oh, it happened.
Yes, it happened, which I know is so delayed, and it's so strange that I would follow Chrissy's mom over her before her.
No, it's not. Because her mom's great.
Okay, because, yeah, my very first follow was Pepper Tide 2, and I have finally decided to follow Chrissy Teigen on Instagram. I have been a follower of her on Twitter for a while, and you know what it was? It was just too many Luna pics in a row that I was like, I just can't say no.
Oh my gosh, love.
Yeah, so I'm really there for the Luna show. I'm a big fan of Chrissy and John as well, but Luna's really bringing me in, so I can't wait for the other baby, because it's probably also gonna be
so cute. It's gonna be so cute.
Yeah, my unfollow is Jen Saviano.
Wait, I feel like you've used her before, have you not?
No, I just texted this to you, that's why it sounds
familiar. Oh, okay.
So I did recently unfollow her. She is a contestant on The Bachelor. She was on, Ben's season?
Nick, I think.
Well, her and Nick got together on Bachelor in Paradise.
Oh, you're right. You're right. So it must have been Ben's. That's why I'm thinking of Nick.
By the way, did you hear who Nick is?
Yes. Wait, you sent me this article, I think.
Wait, who is it? I forgot.
Is this going to be a new thing? It's January Jones.
Oh, yes.
Is this going to be a new
break? Yeah. Seal?
Bachelor men dating the F up.
Why don't they?
Why don't they?
Yeah, why hasn't this happened sooner?
I think it took Sarah Hyland being the brave first woman. But you know what? This is disappointing to me because it's only going to make the Bachelor record of finding true love worse, because they're going to be like, wait, I could date a Hollywood celebrity. Why am I going to stay with this girl that I chose?
So true.
Because like all the past Bachelors have broken up, but all the past Bachelorettes are still with their man. Rachel, Caitlin, and who's the last one? JoJo.
JoJo.
They're all still with their man.
Wait, what does that say?
That guys suck. No, seriously, guys are terrible at choosing their life partner. Like statistically through The Bachelor and Bachelorette, it is true.
Oh my gosh. And I don't know. And yeah. Women like, rule has just been the
those
theme of
are
this whole
facts, part. Ash. Facts.
Yeah. Are you going to watch Winter Games?
No. It looks so dumb. I mean, like, okay, probably, but I'm going to hate myself for it. Okay. I haven't set a DVR recording for it, which is telling. That shows how little I care.
Okay. So yeah, my unfollow is Jen Salviano. I think she might have been on Ben's season and yeah, was on Bachelor in Paradise, had a thing with Nick briefly. And I just followed her because I just thought she like was really pretty and
you were like surprisingly really into her when we were stalking her together. I remember this.
Yeah, I know. So I've been following her for a long time, but now I'm just over her. I don't really know what she's doing anymore. And she, I mean, she's just becoming a blogger like natural, but, I'm just not here for it.
Bye, Jen.
Bye, Jen.
So my two follows are very random. One of them is Justin Guarini on Twitter.
What?
AKA the runner up from the first season of American Idol. Wait, have you seen his Twitter?
No.
He is low key funny. Like I was very pleasantly surprised. He's like witty and he like makes jokes. Kind of has like the Ken Jennings thing going on where he has like a very dry sense of humor and like just like makes like just like he's very sarcastic about a lot of things. And he kind of like pokes fun at himself and like his background and like will respond to some haters with like funny comments. So I appreciate it. I think he's a good sense of humor.
Friends with Kelly still?
That is unclear. But yeah, I appreciate that he has a sense of humor. So he is my follow on Twitter. And then my follow on Instagram is John Chu.
Good.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
So I followed him as a little random. He's not very active, so I actually might unfollow him. I might use him as an unfollow in future weeks. But I actually came to his, or I found him at all through Instagram, through Kristen Bell. She posted an Insta story of the Secret Santa that I guess she does every year, which Dax Shepard, of course, is involved in, as well as Brian Hansen.
Yep.
And John Chu apparently is in this circle of friends.
Wow.
Yeah, so he made it into her story, and then I found his feed, and he posts good things, and he has a cute baby. So I threw him an F.
He got engaged this year.
He did. Well, and he had a baby.
Yeah.
So throwing him some love. And then my unfollow was not very exciting, but I unfollowed because I did follow so many new people. I decided I had to even it out. So I unfollowed Kev Jumba, the YouTuber.
Wait, you've been following him?
Apparently, but he never, I mean, he went on this like weird thing where he like cleansed his social media. So he like hasn't posted in like years. And I'm like, why do I even follow you still? So I unfollowed him.
He's an interesting topic that I could go deep on.
Kevin Wu?
Yeah.
Wait, why?
Well, because he had a really storied history. Like, there's been profiles about him, like, you know, because he was so hot on YouTube and then he got in a really bad car accident. Did you not read this article?
Wait, shut up. How did you not send this to me? I'm upset at you right now.
Okay, I don't know, like, all the details. This came out, like, a couple months ago.
What?
This stuff happened, like, 5 years ago. Like, so he was, like, at the top of his YouTube game. Then he got into a really bad car accident. Really bad car accident. And then it's caused him to, like, rethink his whole life and stuff. And then now he's kind of, like, Buddhist.
I heard about the Buddhist thing, yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, super spiritual. And then I think he, like, and I followed him. I've been following him on YouTube this whole time as well. So I've seen him kind of, like, put out kind of, like, random things at times. And so I think he did try to restart the channel a year ago with some more serious topics. But it's just, like, once you got, like, so big, so fast, fast so young. It's like, I think he's just very pretty lost in what to do now.
Oh my gosh. I cannot believe you didn't send this to me. I've Googled it myself. I don't need you. But fun fact, one of Stacy's friends, my old roommate, when we were at SC together, had like a thing with him, like a very brief thing. He was like, well, not an actual thing, but he was like trying to holler at her and they like ran in the same circles. You don't know her.
Oh.
But she's like a really cute Asian girl, so it makes sense. And she's married now.
Was this in LA?
It was in LA, yeah. But then I think they were from the same town-ish in Texas, so they had that connection. Okay. Yeah.
I see. Yeah, no, and I think like now he's like moved, I don't know if he's like moved back in with his dad or something like that. Like him and his dad is like a really like integral part of the process as well.
Oh, love that. Alrighty. Should we see each other next Tuesday?
We're saying goodnight now.
I forget every time. Okay, good night.